Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise. What am I made of? Why do I get sick? How can I live a more balanced and whole life? These are just a few of the questions that will be explored tonight by your host, naturopath, medical intuitive, and clairvoyant Dr. Rita Louise. Call in and talk to Dr. Rita and her thought-provoking guests. Get the help you need to move beyond any obstacle or challenges affecting your life right from the source. And now back to Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio. I'm Dr. Rita Louise, and thank you for tuning into the second hour of the show. So at this time, we are going to be kind of switching gears from talking about relationships and soulmates and all that juicy stuff to another interesting topic, one that actually goes back, you know, further than, you know, like last week. We're going to be talking about the tarot and the secret language of the tarot. So to do that, we are going to be talking to Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone. So let me tell you a little bit about these guys. So Ruth Ann and Wald are the co-founders of the Tarot School. Together they teach, write, and publish about tarot on all levels, from divination to psychology to esotericism and magical practice. They are perpetual pioneers of new tarot techniques and remain lifelong tarot students. Between them, Ruth Ann and Wald have amassed more than 80 years of experience as tarot practitioners. So please welcome to Just Energy Radio from the tarotschool.com, Ruth and Wald Amberstone.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
So, I'm going, okay, where am I going to start? I don't know, I just had like a very feisty conversation in the last hour about soulmates, and I'm like, ooh, okay, let's start at the beginning. So I think anybody listening to this show, okay, you know, that can kind of get past that whole, like, you know, it's devil stuff part, that would actually listen to this show, you know, I'm sure know what the tarot are, or have seen a deck of tarot cards. But the tarot, you know, it's like, you know, there's the mental image of what they are, but they really have a very deep, deep history. But they, you know, and, you know, like in your intro, you know, you talk about, all right, now I moved the paper and I can't even find it. You know, divination and psychology and magic, which I think a lot of people, they only know, you know, like, whoa, I'm getting a reading and the death card came up. You know, but there's so much more to tarot than just that, isn't there?
Well, you know, what you were just describing really describes the person who's looking rather than what they're looking at. When a person sees a card and the card has on it a name or a picture that is in any way problematic, usually it's problematic because a person has a preconceived idea of what those things are about. So if you say the devil, or you say the lightning struck tower, or you look at death, you already have an idea in your mind of what those things are about. You don't really know what tarot has to say about them, or why they're there, or what function they serve. So as you begin to learn, all of those things open up. If you know little or nothing about it, then you're kind of stuck with what your preconceived notions are. So really, education, knowing what it's about, really helps a great deal in dealing with tarot. If you don't know, it's just a mystery. I can tell you this, though. For people who might be interested to hear this, if there were no connection with things of divinity, things of spirit, things of spirituality, tarot would never have come this far. Tarot originally was a game. And as a game, it lasted and thrived for several hundred years. But in due course, as a game, it began to wind down and became something of an anachronism, which it is to this day. Only when the spiritual community of Western Europe, in the form of ceremonial magicians, took on the task of making tarot into a language, did it become as powerful and as long-lived and as important as it is today. And all of the images and meanings and systems and ideas that are built into tarot they come from that heritage. So tarot is really a system, its own system, of a divine symbolic language, and it really depends on a connection with the divine in one way or another. Of course, everybody's got a different idea of that, but it is that. Tarot is really a language of symbols that hooks an individual person to their divine origin.
And it's a growing, living thing as we go on through the centuries. It evolves. People are very creative with it in terms of how they use it, the different decks that people create. There are many, many ways that people are using tarot and continue to discover how to use it. So it's not just a static thing that started a long time ago and it's an ancient art that we study and try to decipher. That's certainly part of it, but one of the things that we love about it the most is that it's playful and that we can discover new things about it all the time.
That was a long answer to a short question, huh?
Yeah, that was a long answer. I mean, I'm still kind of stuck on, like, the tarot was initially a game. You know, in my, you know, mind, you know, my, like, conspiracy theory kind of mind, you know, my assumption, okay, because this is what I was thinking, was that there was always this esoteric property to it, and the game was just like what, you know, like regular people did. You know what I mean? And then there was those other people, you know, like, in their room somewhere would use them on a deeper level. I didn't realize that it actually started as a game and then transformed into something more.
Well, you know, if I say that, if I make that claim, I may actually not be 100% historically accurate. I am not myself an historian. And that is, I'm not really, really carefully schooled in the names and dates and places of the happenings of the origins of tarot. Tarot tends to be lost in mystery if you go back far enough. But at the point that it becomes an historical object, things can be known about it, and things are. The scholarship that has gone into the history of tarot is quite considerable at this point, and I myself am guilty of not having studied it very strongly or deeply. So I have to be careful when I say what it was or what it wasn't early on. It may be, that there was an aspect of the magical, the philosophical, the spiritual about it, even from the beginning. I really don't know that for sure. My sense is that it was essentially and initially and primarily a game form early on, and that it acquired its symbolism, its relationship to spirituality somewhat later, several hundred years later, if I understand correctly. So it's really been an evolving form.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in addition to the magical, the philosophical, the mystical, there is an added to it, the cultural, the political, the psychological, and in coming times, perhaps other things as well. Tarot is like a little tiny donkey that can carry a huge load up a mountain. It'll carry just about anything you want to put on it.
All right, so how can, now you got me going, well, how can it be political? I mean, I just keep seeing, like, you know, George Bush and Cheney cards, you know.
Well,
yeah, but seriously.
Well, some time ago, maybe in the 1960s, when tarot began in a way to come out of the closet, when tarot became available to more people because of the way the culture of the times was going with its counterculture movements and its very rapid growth of youthful energy and a revolutionary sense of what was important, tarot came out in that era and began to be available to people in the form of new decks and new ideas. At that time, we include such things as feminism, ethnicity, and a certain kind of psychology that was part of a revolutionary time period, a whole set of new ideas, the rise of new groups to political and cultural power, and the attempt to give those movements some legitimacy in terms of thought and philosophy. And tarot played a part in that, and the new decks that came out at that time reflected those political and cultural issues, and they still do.
Good answer. No, I never would have thought of it from that perspective, but that totally makes sense to me. Totally makes sense. So, you know, one of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, the tarot is filled with symbolism, and that's, you know, one of the things that your book is totally about. You know, but why is symbology so important?
I'll give you a real easy answer to that. If you understand what a symbol is, you'll know why it's so important. And, of course, everybody would have a different definition, I suppose, and perhaps the dictionary might have a definition of its own. But my definition of a symbol is anything at all that connects you to your own truth. A symbol is a bearer of truth. Sometimes symbols are forms of generally accepted truth. Religious symbols come to mind. Political symbols like a flag come to mind. But in every case, whether they're general or specific, personal or public, a symbol bears some relationship to something that is true and important. And that's what makes tarot what it is. Tarot is important precisely because it contains such an overwhelming connection with the importance of symbols. If there were no symbolism in tarot, tarot again would remain something trivial. It's only because each person who uses it sees their own truth in it in some way or another and makes the pictures and names and numbers of the deck represent those truths. That's the reason why it's important, and that's why it has a continuing life.
And like I read tarot, I mean, I read cards, and I'm just going to say it in a real generic sense, you know, but I'm very visual, and so I tried for years to learn the tarot and study it, but I figured out that I have, like, zero memory skills for certain things that spirit doesn't want me to memorize. So tarot, numerology, you know, stuff like that, can't memorize them. I don't know why. Tried for years, doesn't work. But I can sit there and put out a spread and be like, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I used to run a psychic fair, and I would, you know, we would swap readings. And so I would read for all the tarot readers, and they never complained to me. So that was good. You know, and so from my perspective, you know, the symbology on the card, you know, would just open up this whole world, you know, around this person, you know, just from an intuitive place, not from like, I know what this card means at all from a technical place.
Right. The pictures are made up of many different symbols, and so many of them are symbols that are part of our everyday life that we already have associations for, such as gardens and clouds and pools and moon. You know, we have an emotional response when we look at the moon or the stars, and there's information that we have naturally that can inform our readings when those symbols come up in the cards.
You don't have to remember them. You were born with them. Your culture gave them to you as a heritage from the start. And tarot simply reflects the things that you already know and you use on a regular basis. The other thing is the systematic development of those ideas is for a few people who want to study. But for most people, doing readings is mostly a matter of reaching down into your own repository of prior information that is that comes up or is evoked by the images on the card. So you can do a perfectly fine reading without having any systematic knowledge at all.
We have a technique that we call the voice of the card. And essentially what that entails is looking at a card. You could do this with any picture, actually. You can do it with a postcard also. But sticking with the tarot, you have this card in front of you and scan the image, and eventually a small detail will catch your eye and hold it. It'll hold your attention. That symbol, or perhaps it might be a color, will have a message in it. And that message is its own thing. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the standard divinatory meaning of what that card might mean. And the symbols are very potent message bearers.
Well, very much so. So let's, in your book, you know, you focus on the Rider-Waite deck, you know, and why did you choose this deck to use to explore the symbolism?
We've been working with it for a long time, so of course we're very familiar with it. when we worked with it initially, one of our first priorities was to get our students familiar with the deck itself. It always seemed to me that tarot was an instrument, very much like a piano would be an instrument for a musician. If you were studying the piano, you'd probably want to know the instrument pretty well. If you wanted to go anywhere with it, be a real student of it or a really strong practitioner of it, you'd want to know where all the keys were without having to look. You'd want to know what the insides were made of. You'd want to know what a piano was really made of and what it could do. So it seemed to me that you'd want to know your instrument really well. So when we began, we tried to teach our students their instrument. And we would have them look at the deck very carefully so that they actually became familiar with the actual bits and pieces and parts that made up each card. And we did that so successfully and to such an extent that after a while, our students had the cards pretty well memorized. They were in their minds. It was in their heads. They didn't even really need the deck in front of them to do a reading.
Mm-hmm.
However, even though they were familiar with the actual pictures, they didn't actually know what they meant. It was perfectly possible to know that there was a white sun in the upper right-hand corner of the Fool card. But so what? What difference did it make that the Fool has a red feather coming out of his cap? Or that he has blonde hair? Or that he's wearing boots and not shoes? Or that he's carrying a staff? All of those things are in the picture, and you might get to recognize and remember it, but you wouldn't know what it was about. And to the best of my knowledge, very, very few, if any, practitioners of tarot know what the significance is of the bits and pieces that make up an image. So since we were working with the Wake deck to begin with as our benchmark deck, we figured that an exploration of its symbolism would be something that our students could use, and we actually did this book initially as a course, a year-long course of study for our students. And then when we put it out as a book, it seemed to us that it had a general relevance and that people could use it and its bits and pieces, even though they were working with other decks, and possibly even if they weren't interested in tarot. But as far as why we chose the Wake deck, initially, that's a whole other story. Is that a story you're interested in, or is that something we should leave for another time?
If you want to go ahead. Is it a long story?
No, it's not really a long story. It's a matter of personal predilection. I am personally interested in systems and ideas and thought structures and patterns and grand structures of ideas and history. The Wake deck is a jigsaw puzzle made up of references to such a system. It is one of the original decks that came out of a period of time when that system was being established and finished in the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century. At the beginning of the 20th century, the end of the 19th century, there was a great deal of effort, a great deal of work put into making a compound structure, this jigsaw puzzle that I think of all of the various esoteric concerns that were interesting to the magical community of the day, astrology and numerology and Kabbalah and alchemy and Christian esotericism, and all sorts of things went into this puzzle. And what that group of people did at that time was to take a tarot deck and turn it into a reference point, a mnemonic device for that entire system. And they put in the images of their cards references to that system. And if you understood those references, you had an instant memory device to bring you to them, and also a way to use them and find ways to connect the different parts. There were a couple of decks that did that. The Wake deck was only one of them, but we liked the Wake deck for a variety of reasons, and so we chose that. The later decks tend to be more artistic, with some reference to the original symbolism, but not a great deal, and the main point of those decks is their art rather than their symbolism, I think. I guess that depends on the deck. But the Wake deck is one of those original ones that dealt specifically and exactly and particularly with the system that was behind it. And since I love system, that's the deck I chose.
Good answer. You know, I mean, because it always makes me laugh, you know, like there's the Cat Tarot. And, I mean, there's all kinds of, I mean, you know, people that are listening, you know, there are so many decks out there, you know, and we all have our favorites. You know, but in my little view of the world, I mean, the Rider-Waite deck is like the base deck that you work with, period. You know, and then you just kind of go from there.
Why would you consider it a base deck or a benchmark deck?
Because it just feels really authentic, just on a very feeling level.
Does that mean that other decks are less authentic to you? Or that
some of them
are?
I don't get. Some of them I just don't even get at all. You know, like, I like the Rider-Waite deck, and I have a little tarot class that I teach, and that's the deck that I use for that. I like the Rorik deck because it has really cool pictures, and I'm really visual. You know, but some of the imagery is like, it doesn't really make sense, sort of, you know, in some ways. You know, but then another deck that I used to play with, well, I had a friend that had them, and I bought them, and then I ended up giving them away, was the Toth deck, which doesn't even have any of the symbology of the Rider-Waite deck, if I recall correctly.
It's the same basic system, the same basic material, organized according to different imagery lines. The people who created them were very different in temperament. The artists who rendered them were very different in temperament and background. And the Toth deck and the Waite deck come from exactly the same tradition. And the differences are essentially personal. And people gravitate to one or the other according to how, you know, they feel about life in general. The people who have a highly dramatic internal sense tend to like the Toth deck better. People who are more pedantic and systems-oriented will like the Waite deck better. And then there's a whole bunch of people who like neither the one nor the other, would much prefer to see women with long, red, beautiful hair and moonlight, you know, treading on water and with a lion under one palm and, you know, and a bird on the other hand.
Right, or a totally abstract deck.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of personal predilections, and both the Toth and the Waite deck come out of the same tradition. That's something you should be aware of, even though they refer to the same material, with a different artistic sensibility. If you were a student of tarot and you wanted to work with the Toth deck, you would have no lack of stuff to do. In fact, there's a whole universe of students of the Toth deck and of Crowley who created it, and it is very systematic and very deep, and it's just an alternative. It's another way of approaching it.
I mean, this might say, well, it might not sound so weird to you, but, I mean, I had a deck, and I had to give them away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I couldn't read them. After a while, they kind of creeped me out. It was like, okay, gotta go.
What induced you to buy them in the first place?
I had a girlfriend who had them, and so I would go to her house, and we would swap readings, and at her house, I could read those cards. When I bought them for myself, I couldn't read them.
That's very funny.
Very first reading, the first reading that I ever received was with that deck. And I don't remember anything about it except that the woman who did the reading told me that that's what I should be doing, that I should be doing tarot. And I said, well, that's interesting. But I couldn't even find that deck at the time. So I wound up reading with the Aquarian deck for 20 years, which I still love. But it doesn't have the wealth of symbolism that this one does.
I mean, the primary deck that I read with now are called Dream Cards, which isn't even a tarot deck, which I've only found have been Washington State, and they're really bizarre, but they got images everywhere, and, you know, didn't even read the book because that was weird, but, you know, but they work for me, you know? So.
What you're describing, I think, falls under the heading of an oracle deck. There are decks that are intentionally symbolic that are meant to be divinatory forms that don't require or use the tarot structure. And so those are called oracle decks, and they may have more or less cards in a standard tarot deck, and they may have quite different symbolism in them, and yet they're useful to do readings. Plenty of good oracle decks out there.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that an oracle deck does not do is it does not have any reference at all for them. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I guess it depends on the deck. But it doesn't depend on any direct reference to the system out of which tarot grows. It's rather personal, and it has both the value and the drawback of a personal statement.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we need to take a quick break. I'm Dr. Rita Louise. We're talking to Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone, author of The Secret Language of the Tarot, and we'll be back after these messages.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Rita Louise, will return right after these messages.
The International Association of Medical Intuitives is an organization dedicated to connecting you with professional medical intuitives from around the world. So if you're feeling ill and under the weather, or are looking to join a professional organization such as this, visit www.medicalintuitives.net. That's www.medical-intuitives.net.
Move past the crossroads in your life and discover alternative solutions to your deepest concerns at SoulHealer.com. So whether it's a physical problem, an emotional issue, a question about work, or troubles in your relationships, naturopath and medical intuitive Dr. Rita Louise can help you. Bring peace, harmony, and health back into your life. Schedule a session today. Visit SoulHealer.com right away and live the life you've been dreaming of.
Are you involved in a new relationship that seems too good to be true? You know, there is an easy way to find out who you're dealing with. For over a decade, AmericaFind has provided its customers with information to make faster, safer, and smarter relationship decisions. Their background check service is a quick and inexpensive way to feel more secure about all your personal and professional relationships. AmericaFind will empower you with all the resources you need to check an individual's background and credibility. So before you say, I do, or hire a new babysitter or nanny, call AmericaFind. Know what you're getting into before you invest your heart, your money, or your time. Call us toll-free at 888-256-2155, and in less than 30 minutes, we'll give you peace of mind. Let AmericaFind tell you the truth.
You can get a copy of Dr. Rita's latest book, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, by visiting www.soulhealer.com. Get your copy today. Hi, I'm Dr. Rita Louise, the host of Just Energy Radio and the founder of the Institute of Applied Energetics. Start a new career today on the leading edge of alternative health and healing. The Institute of Applied Energetics can help you develop the specialized skills you need to work as an energy medicine practitioner, intuitive counselor, or professional medical intuitive. Besides our outstanding technical instruction, our programs also support you in creating and building a successful business in this rapidly growing field. Be a catalyst for changing the way healthcare is done around the world. Contact the Institute of Applied Energetics right away or visit AppliedEnergeticsInstitute.com.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome back to Just Energy Radio, and I'm here talking to Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone from the TarotSchool.com, and we're talking about tarot. So, you know, one of the things that you talked about before the break, and I have to tell you, it's like in reading your book, I mean, I started playing with the tarot in high school, you know?
Yes, I do know.
And I would never, ever think about taking the imagery on the cards and breaking them down to such detail that you guys did. I mean, like, one of the things that I was reading was about the lilies and the roses, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't really remember any of those. And I'm looking at the pictures, and it was like, it's in the wallpaper, it's in his shirt, and I'm like, God, you know? But yeah, you would never think to look at that. You know, and so anyone that has a deck of cards, you know, you might really want to take some time to just really look at them. But anyway, so here's my question. You know, so one of the things that you mentioned, you know, in the first part, and I figured I would just use that as an example, was the red feather in the fool's hat. You know, so what would that mean? Or if there is a feather that shows up in a card, you know, what would that symbol mean?
Well, you know, there is a sense, there is an awareness in tarot as part of an esoteric universe, that there is a world that could be considered hidden, a world above, a world of heaven, a world of spirit, a world of the invisible and the hidden. And out of that world, in some way or another, after some mysterious manner that we don't quite understand, out of all that is hidden, somehow all that is visible emerges. And here we have at this, in this world that we occupy with our senses and our mind and our bodies, here we have a place that somehow springs apparently from out of nowhere. We have a world. Where did it come from? It's an old question. And in tarot, the question is answered essentially by saying that there is a world, or a great deal of the world, most of the world, in fact, is out of sight. All the things that bring this world into being are essentially hidden and out of sight. But you can trace the line back from the world below, which is the world of the visible and the manifest, to the world above, which is a world of the abstract, a world of the spirit, and ultimately a divine world. And there's a connection between the two. There is a phrase that is very much part of the tradition of the esoteric, and that is, as above, so below. The idea that the world that can be seen mirrors precisely and exactly the world that cannot be seen. The hidden and the visible are mirror images of each other. And there has to be a connection between the two. Somehow or another, there needs to be a way to get from one to the other. The feather in the hat of the fool, or in the headband of the fool, represents in some way, there's a particular way, but this is probably not the time to go into the particulars, but it represents in general the connection of the very highest levels of human consciousness with an even higher divine level, which can't be seen, perceived, or dealt with directly, but which nevertheless sends a plume of its own energy deep into the heart and mind of a human being. That plume of energy, broadly speaking, is represented by that feather.
You'd never think.
No, you never would. In fact, the interesting thing about tarot esotericism, tarot knowledge, the system behind it that gives it its images and its meanings, is that you can't figure it out by looking at the pictures. Either you know it or you don't. Somebody has to teach it to you. It is not intuitive in that sense at all. You're never going to guess by looking at it by yourself. And nevertheless, when you learn it, when somebody does explain it to you, you say, oh, of course. And after a while, all of the various references to the system fold into each other and make a kind of universal flowing sense. And it's very much the same way that a language has rules and grammar and vocabulary and syntax and all sorts of things, which if you learned it as a system would sound very complex and difficult. But when you learn it organically, the way a child learns a language, you get all of that together. And you don't really have to pay too much attention to it. So after you learn the system that lies behind the language of tarot, all of it begins to make sense organically, and you don't have to think too hard.
So you already said that you're not a historian, but do you have any knowledge or understanding of where this system came from or what this system is?
Yes, I have a broad general knowledge of it without knowing a great deal about names, places, dates, people. I know the generality of it, and the generality of it is that tarot arose from a matrix of ideas, a matrix being a general ground or soil from which things spring. The matrix of tarot was primarily Renaissance humanism, the idea that a human being was the measure of all things. Out of that idea, it was possible to mix and match and integrate the things that I mentioned to you before, Greek and Egyptian mythology and religion and spirituality, Christian mysticism, Jewish mysticism, alchemy, astrology, numerology, and a variety of other things that are a little more specialized even than those. Each one of those was a separate discipline, and yet each one of those together made a kind of stew from which the scholars and humanists of the time drew their inspirations. It was possible for a person in those days to be simultaneously a priest, a scientist, and a magician. One person could be all of those things at the same time because knowledge.
That's because there were a lot less people on the planet, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, what happened was that in the interest of discovering the nature of things, and remember, we're talking about the 14th and 15th centuries. Things were young yet. systems of knowledge were not yet organized in Western thought. Western thought itself was not yet fully developed. It was in process, in bloom. And at that time, all of those things were mixed together, and they produced, at least in part, a magical view of the universe. Out of that magical view, which came to be ultimately ceremonial magic, but actually includes such things as Rosicrucianism and Martinism and a variety of other things, Freemasonry, a whole bunch of things eventually emerged from that same stew pot. And one of the things that emerged from it was tarot and its systems. And Masonry, Rosicrucianism, tarot, astrology, Kabbalah, all of those things actually have a kind of common sensibility. They have a feel, a flair, an aura that is very similar around each of them, although the details are different. So tarot emerged out of all of that. At a certain point in its history, tarot became like not exactly a lightning rod, that's the wrong word for it. I'm not sure what the chemical term for it is, but it is possible to stick certain kinds of, a stick or a rod or an instrument of some kind into a solution, and you'll find that the various particles in that solution begin to adhere to what you stuck into the mixture. And tarot was like that. It became a place for different bits and pieces of the esoteric universe to adhere to. And little bit by little bit, it accrued the ability to express each one of those separate disciplines and to make them interactive. A person could speak astrology, numerology, Kabbalah, and alchemy all in the same breath when they were looking at a tarot card. And before tarot, to the best of my ability, that wasn't really possible. And all of that began to happen somewhere around the end of the 18th century and became increasingly strong as it moved into the 19th century. And by the end of the 19th century, it was very, very solid, and tarot had acquired over that 100-year period all of that stuff. And, of course, we're now the heir of all of that stuff. The whole 20th century has been a continuation of that into more modern concerns, like death psychology, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole issue of archetypes, which is new to tarot and only became part of it maybe in the last 50 years or so.
Well, you know, speaking of archetypes, it actually is a great lead-in to a question that came via email from Jim. And the question is, and I'm kind of rephrasing this question, so I'm hoping this is really what the question is, but can people have, like, personal cards? You know, like, maybe you went through a deck. You know, like, for me, the Fool card, Lamat, used to come up in just about every reading that, you know, as, you know, in a Celtic cross as you, the questioner. So I would do readings with my roommates and stuff, and I always came up as, you know, like environmental influences. It got to be really kind of embarrassing after a while. But, you know, can people have a personal card or, you know, and I think the contemporary word would be that they see a card or a certain cards as archetypes for themselves or what they're going through in their life?
Sure. That would be largely projective, I would think. The word projective meaning that you find something in yourself that you can then see in an external object. So, for example, if there's something in the image of the Fool, let's say, that seems particularly pertinent to your life, and if you're very much aware of that, you'll be very much aware of it every time the Fool comes up, perhaps hyper-aware of it, and the Fool will acquire a quality for you that separates it from the other cards. It'll be particularly pertinent for you, but the pertinence of the card to you comes from you first. You're the one who would make that connection, and the card simply functions as an expression of that.
Related to that, we have a system we've developed that we call birth cards, and there are others who have done similar work as well, which is the cards are derived from a numerological reduction of your birth date. So the energy that you come into the world with can be expressed through these cards. And we have a lot of information about birth cards actually up on our website, which, by the way, is tarotschool.com. There's no the in it. But if you go there, there's a section on birth cards where we have all our notes up, and there's a little calendar, calculator, that people can figure out their own archetypal tarot birth cards by typing in their birth date and then read about that. So there's different ways that the cards can embody our own personal energy.
By the way, you know, that can change. what is important to you, what sticks out for you, and which is something that's attached to a particular card today may be quite different from what is important to you next year or the year after that or a decade later. So archetypal connections may change as your own attention changes. What you pay attention to, what's important to you at any given time, is going to give you your relationship to those cards. And since that changes, the archetypal connections may change as well. Birth cards don't. Birth cards are based on your date of birth, which certainly isn't going to change. But unless you know what your birth cards are, unless somebody has told you about birth cards and shown you how to figure them out, you might never have even thought that the cards that turn out to be your birth cards have any relevance to you. You only find that out later as a matter of learning rather than a matter of intuition.
But oftentimes people, you know, when we tell them, these are your birth cards, after we, you know, we figure out the math, and they say, oh, you know, that's one of them has always been my favorite, or, gee, I really like them. Occasionally people won't really recognize themselves in the cards. But a lot of times the cards that they've been drawn to over and over again actually do turn out to be a match with their birth cards as well.
By the way, just out of curiosity, you had somebody who asked that question of you. I don't know. I might have gone off the topic. Did we answer his question, do you think? Or did we miss something?
I think so. No, I think I, you know, I'm kind of interpreting from the message that that was the question, and so I think you answered it.
Good.
You know, I mean, yeah, I think so.
I'm always a little bit afraid that I get so enthusiastic about my own answer that I forget the question, so thank you for
reassuring. Well, usually, you know, if you're not answering the question, you get another email, so.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You know, like, well, that's not what I meant. So during one of our conversations, because I have to admit I didn't take the opportunity to listen to what you had sent me, but during one of our phone conversations prior to the show, you were talking about that there are different cards for different years, you know, and it makes me think of like, in like, we're in a 1 year numerologically speaking,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you said that this year is a Wheel of Fortune year, you know, and I've never had anybody make a comment that, you know, there are cards that go with years. And can you kind of talk about that in a general sense and then kind of talk about what energy we actually are in present?
Well, you know, it's a simple numerological reduction. It really isn't very difficult. This is the year 2008. So if you take the numbers that make up 2008 and you add them together, you have a 2 plus a 0 plus a 0 plus an 8. And, of course, that adds up to 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 10 is the number of the Wheel of Fortune. So it's that simple.
Well, so now it's like all these, that's a secret.
Yeah, whether you make anything significant out of that or not depends on whether you care to do that.
Some people will take the reduction further and add the 1 and the 0, which would be 1, which is magician.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you have a commercial coming up.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about that a little bit more after the break. I'm Dr. Marie Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. We're talking to Ruth Ann and Wald Amerstone from www.tarotschool.com. And we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Just Energy Radio with your host, Dr. Marie Louise, will return right after these messages. I'm James Othayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. Listen to Dr. Rita's Soul Healer Moment live each third Sunday night of the month on Feet to the Fire. www.feettofire.com for more information.
Are you in the middle of a messy divorce? Do you think your spouse is trying to hide money, possessions, or property from you? Call America Fine today. America Fine will give you an accurate picture of your spouse's assets. We can help you locate any hidden bank accounts, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or safety deposit boxes that have been concealed from you in the courts. The reality is, the court can only divide what it knows exists. Be smart and take control of your future. Make sure everything is put on the table before you step into the courtroom. Just call us today, toll free at 888-256-2155, and in less than 24 hours, we'll give you peace of mind. Let America Fine help you get the fair judgment you deserve.
Finally, there's a healing and ascension tool that delivers real results faster than you ever dreamed possible. Guaranteed. Feel your body release those lingering physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual blockages. Sense a profound awakening to your next level of intuition and oneness with your higher self. Discover Archangel Metatron's Healing and Ascension CDs at AtlantisHealthCenters.com. Visit AtlantisHealthCenters.com today.
You want to host your own radio talk show? You provide the voice and the content. We do all the rest. www.innerstreamsradio.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rita Louise, the host of Just Energy Radio. There's no greater blessing in the world than your good health. Science is now showing that simply eating a high-quality diet doesn't provide us with all the nutrition we need. Doctors recommend we supplement our diets with products derived from whole food concentrates. And one of the most complete and nutritious whole foods found on the earth are little microscopic plants called marine phytoplankton, which can be found in a product called Frequency. I've been taking Frequency every day for about 6 months now, and I feel more energized and full of life. If you're ready to make a difference in your health, I encourage you to try Frequency and see what it can do for you. To learn more about Frequency and other amazing whole food natural products direct from Mother Nature, please visit productsforthesoul.com. Start the year off right by visiting livinggrocery.com. Experience the miracle of real nutrition as it helps you to lose weight and improve your overall health. Don't mess with pills or capsules. We provide the highest quality, all-natural, organic foods that come ready to eat. And best of all, it's delivered straight to your door. Visit livinggrocery.com now and experience your own amazing transformation.
And now back to Just Energy Radio with Dr. Rita Louise.
Hello and welcome to Just Energy, or welcome back to Just Energy Radio. We're here talking to Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone, authors of The Secret Language of Tarot. And before the break, I was asking about, you know, the year and then the Wheel of Fortune year. And I just, you know, if you could just touch on what that energy feels like. I always like to get information about, you know, where we are from an energetic place. And I think that would be kind of interesting for the readers to hear about. Or listeners.
Deal with that one?
I had a feeling you were going to do that. Well, the Wheel of Fortune is always moving. It never stops. It oftentimes signals change. But it's not the sudden kind of change that the Tower might portend. It's an organic, flowing change. It's cyclical. And so things are shifting. Sometimes they're shifting up, sometimes they're shifting down. It really depends. But the one thing that you can depend on with the Wheel of Fortune is that it never sits still. So that would be very indicative of the energies that are happening around us now.
There is an esoteric title that goes with each one of the cards and an esoteric function that goes with each one of the cards, hidden things that are specially connected with those cards. And the function, the esoteric function of the Wheel of Fortune is a double function, and it's called riches and poverty. And in the Wheel of Fortune year, there's a great possibility, a great potential for changes in fortune. If you have a lot already, you might find yourself going down and losing some of it. If you have very little at this moment or things are going badly for you, the chances are pretty good there'll be an upturn. There is a tendency in the Wheel of Fortune to take whatever is going on and turn it on its head. But it's not permanent. It tells you that whatever goes around comes around, whatever is true of you today will not be true tomorrow, and then once again will be untrue again. It tends to keep things moving, keep things fresh.
There's something else to keep in mind with the Wheel of Fortune as a person finds themselves dealing with the dramas of day-to-day life. And that is that depending upon where you place yourself on the wheel, that will determine how quickly things are moving and how dramatic they can get. Many of us tend to live our lives on the rim, where if you had a wheel that was turning, think of a bicycle wheel or a car wheel, something like that, the rim is where all the action happens. That's where the rubber hits the road and you really feel the pressure and the speed is there. But as you move towards the hub, it becomes slower, more steady, more calm, and eventually can be still. So the challenge for us during this time is to try to move away from all the quick-paced drama that's going on around us and center ourselves so that it doesn't make the drama necessarily go away, but our experience of it is totally different, and we're not swept up in all of the activity that's swirling around us.
You know, and I think that that's a really important concept because there is so much going on, and I'm going to say on the planet in a very generic sense, and I think people being able to find that peace and balance within themselves in the midst of the chaos is good.
Yeah, and so that's a very strong, important message that the Wheel of Fortune can give us this year.
By the way, I'll mention this, although I don't know if it's politic to mention it. I have no particular love of the predictive qualities of systems like astrology, numerology, and even this kind of thing. I don't run my life by it. I don't look at my horoscope to tell me what I should be doing. And I always get irritated when that comes up as a subject matter. That's why I told Ruth Ann to answer this, because it's not my cup of tea. I don't care whether this is a Wheel of Fortune year or some other year. It makes no difference to me. That's a piece of heresy coming from a person who works with these systems. Just letting you know.
Well, if you happen to know that this is a Wheel of Fortune year and those things do matter to you, this is one way that you can work with those energies.
That is true.
And just because Wald doesn't necessarily pay attention to them doesn't mean that they don't exist.
Okay. Well, we're kind of running out of time, you know. You know, I just like to add into the mix, you know, because we've done a few shows just about, you know, where the energy is on the planet, you know what I mean? Because I think people just need to kind of get any little piece that they can, you know what I mean? So it was just kind of interesting and curious because, I've never heard that methodology, and I was like, sounds interesting. Okay, so let's get down to the real business. So if somebody wants to get a copy of your book, where would that be available?
They can get it through us, through tarotschool.com. And if they do, I mean, it's available everywhere, bookstores and online. But if they do get it through us, we will autograph it and personalize it. And we are also giving people who buy the book through us a free class on pillars. It's a two-hour class in MP3 format that they can download and listen to at their leisure, and we'll give an idea of how much deeper you can go into the symbols.
You have to realize that this book is the notes for classes on these things, and three or four or five pages of notes is only the beginning of a two-hour discussion on each one of these symbols, so it goes an awful lot deeper even than the book, and the class that we're offering is an example of that.
And so you guys offer classes, so are they in-person classes, are they online classes?
We do
a combination of both.
Media. Actually, one of the things that Tarot School is known for is innovation in that particular way. We have live classes in New York City. We have a very fine correspondence course that goes out to people all over the world. We have teleclasses that people can come to and enjoy if all they have is a telephone. And we have audio, CDs and audio forms that people can buy at their leisure that will give them access to all the classes we've done over the years. And we do talk shows like this, and we produce events, and there's all sorts of things that we do.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Farrell Humphrey lives in the Dallas area, and I just got an email from her yesterday about a tarot class that she has coming up in June, and I was like, and then at the top it said, you know, graduate of the Tarot School, and I was like, okay, that's a really small world. You know, but if you're in that, you know, but I'm just going to put it out. If you're in Dallas, give Ferrell a call at 972-489-9123 if you're interested in learning your guy's technique about reading the tarot. Anyway, tarotschool.com. Guys, thank you so much for sharing your information with my listeners. We'll have to have you back.
Pleasure.
And then next week, two great guests. We have Alan Smith, where we'll talk about working with alternative health therapies, and R.J. Grisario, where we're going to talk about how to live your life to the fullest. And so, until next week, I'm Dr. Rita Louise. This is Just Energy Radio. Be blessed.
Join host Dr. Rita Louise each week at this time for Just Energy Radio. Point your browser to www.justenergyradio.com for more show information and to contact Dr. Rita. Until next time, remember, it's all just energy.